I'm Bob Franklin. This is Like It Is.
A topic of discussion is stereotyping.
Racial stereotyping is a depiction of an ethnicity or race based on tropes and cliches, as elaborated on by Dr. Carol and Harvey Guntherson of Religious Americans Against Indian Nicknames and Logos.
If you have a mascots on both sides of the field, a football field, and on one side, let's say, are called the race-based nickname of the Indians, and the other team, let's say, has an animal-based name of hawks or beavers, whatever. Mm-hmm. And on the one side, you have the mascot of, let's say, the San Diego Chicken. If you visualize that on one side of the field, some humorous mascot on the other side, and on the other side is an American Indian mascot. It basically equates the two, and so it is extremely offensive. And it's not a matter only of offensiveness. In a certain sense, that tends to, it's really a much more significant question than just offensiveness. It's a matter of psychological harm. Almost every major regional and national American Indian organization has opposed these nicknames and logos using race. And for a very good reason. It's not only a matter of offensive, it's a matter of psychological harm, because stereotypes cause how people think about themselves and also how they think about other people. And the American Psychological Association, after an extensive review of the literature, they passed a resolution opposing the nicknames and logos on the basis of psychological harm to American Indian students. So it's not only a matter of offensiveness, but really a matter of psychological harm that's caused by stereotypes.
That was Dr. Harvey Guntherson of Religious Americans Against Indian Nicknames and Logos.
I discussed the subject with Jack Shaheen, author of The TV Arab and Real, R-E-E-L, Bad Arabs, How Hollywood Vilifies a People. Thank you, Jack, for joining me and being a guest today on Like It Is. Mr. Shaheen joined me via telephone from New Jersey. I asked Jack about the definition of stereotyping.
Stereotyping, really the origin of the word, dates back to the printing press, where you had one solid metal plate, and you took that metal plate and you made a reproduction. If it was a photograph or an essay, you just ran that through, and as a result, you had one fixed image, a fixed image of a person, or of an announcement or of a news story, and it was rigid and it was repetitive and it was the only image that we saw. In other words, if it happened to be a photograph and I caught you, Bob Franklin, you know, when you were making an ugly face, and that's the only image that I transmitted to everyone, to all your listeners, this is what Bob Franklin looks at, then I'm typing you, I'm stereotyping you. I'm saying, in a sense, that I'm limiting how and what you really are by saying you are only this kind of a person. I'm kind of selectively framing you as something that you're not.
And stereotyping can be damaging or
correct? Or flattering. If I caught you in a tux and you were on your way out with your wife or with a lovely female companion or your daughter and you had a big smile on your face, I mean, that would be great. Everyone would think you're just the neatest guy on earth.
However, if you got me with that ugly face,
yeah, then everyone would want to avoid you. And it would depend on how you were dressed as well. Let's say if I dressed you up as a hillbilly, you know, and I took out a couple of teeth and you hadn't shaved, you know, and you were wearing jeans with holes in them and you had several tattoos all over your body, I mean, that's still another. And so what we've done historically, it's easy. Short, stereotyping is easy. You know, look at someone, they're dark, and you say, well, they're darker than I am, therefore they must be threatening. Or they're Asian, and they say, gee, they have different eyes, therefore they're threatening. Or they happen to be Jews or Muslims, they don't go to church, they go to synagogues, or they go to mosques, they're different from me, therefore they're threatening. Or it can be a very positive image. You know, if it's someone who's Irish, we have St. Patrick's Day. All the Irish are good-humored, they're lovable people, they're very devout, they're very religious, which, of course, at the turn of the century, that was not the case. They were old potato farmers that we didn't want them. We wanted to get them out of here. All the Protestants wanted to kick them out of the country, you know. And so it's used, I think, to stop us from thinking, and it's used in a very destructive manner if we let it get out of hand.
So my next question was going to be, is stereotyping of groups something that is done consciously or subconsciously? So what I'm hearing you say is that individuals can be programmed to think about an individual in a certain way or manner.
Well, I think it's done both, and you know that as well as I do. We had, let's flash back 50 years ago or even 100 years ago, where people who hated blacks, hated anything black, went out of their way to show black men as big black bucks who were out to seduce the white women, who were ignorant, who really all they were interested in were interested in the seduction of white women. They were poor. They were backward. They were basically subhuman beings who belonged back in the jungle. And there were some people for political motives, you know, decided that they would not let blacks emerge as a integral part of our society. So they deliberately went out of their way to demean anything and everything black. Black men, black women, black children, even black children. And then there were others who were taught through this vilification process, through the media, through, you know, the selectively framing blacks as different. They were taught to hate blacks, and so it was subconscious. So, it's difficult to prove. In other words, I'm not sure if a KKK Ku Klux Klan member would stand up and say, I deliberately vilified that person because of his color. Then again, he or she, you know, may or may not. But certainly the actions of the Klan made others think that blacks were not as human as the rest of us.
Now, we're gonna get to your book and the role that the media currently is playing, but I'd like to maybe stay on this point a little further. In terms of vilifying an individual group or people, the objective is to enlarge the other person's status. Is that it? Is that correct?
Well, I think some of it is to feel that you're superior. In other words, if I vilify you, Bob Franklin is an Arkansas hillbilly, okay, who's backward and who really doesn't know much about anything. Supposedly, that makes me feel good. But there may be other reasons. There may be political reasons, in the sense that I don't want you to participate in the democratic process that we have in our country. It may be ignorance. I'm just too dumb to know any better. So it's not as simple in terms of finding out motives. But by and large, I think a lot of it has to do with politics and economics. In other words, if I keep you down on the farm, you know, you're not going to be a threat to me, and I can take advantage of you.
Now let's talk about images on the big screen. And you've written on stereotyping, in particular, of Arabs.
Right. As you know, the book Real, R-E-E-L, Bad Arabs, looks at about 1,000 movies over a century that, in one way or another, stereotyped Arabs as villains. Right.
Could you maybe point out a couple of those movies, treacherous movies that really did a poor job of portraying Arabs?
Well, I think it really intensified in the 1980s. By the way, all those 1,000 or nearly 1,000 films were produced before 9/11. I have to make sure people, your listeners, are aware of that. Perhaps the most offensive are movies like True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger, where you show him, he and his wife, gunning down scores of Palestinians who you never see Palestinians as victims of oppression. You always see Palestinians as ugly, foul-mouthed terrorists. And Arnold, I stopped counting after about 80 dead bodies on the screen. And then the most recent film called Rules of Engagement, which shows Samuel Jackson Jr. and his fellow Marines gunning down Arab women and children. And the movie justifies the killing of nearly 100 Arab civilians by our Marines. And the reason that these films are so offensive is they appeal primarily to a teenage audience, audiences in both films stood up and applauded at the very end. And the movies were produced in cooperation with the Department of Defense. And so they're troubling when you see that our taxpayer monies are being used to teach people to hate.
In terms of that particular message, the message of hate, what power does the producer have in basically saying, no, I don't want my picture to take on this particular image or point of view?
Well, I think it comes from the top, the producer, the studio itself. In other words, Bob, if I'm working for you, right, and I have I'm doing a talk radio show, and every day on that talk radio show, I'm saying that each and every person in the state of Arkansas and all these other states, you know, really belong in red pickup trucks with flat tires so they won't leave the area and create a bad impression. And each and every day I start saying that, don't you have the power to stop me?
Yes.
You certainly do. You can fire me on the spot right then and there. So it comes from the top. It comes from studio executives and the producers and writers. They always say that they don't have the control, but they do. And most of them know exactly what they're doing. They're not naive. It's not ignorance. They know what they're doing.
How about education? How much in terms of educating those particular individuals at the top about how harmful those images are and how powerful, very powerful, the media actually is, in particular television?
Well, I think they know. The tragic part is I think they're aware. They wouldn't be where they are unless they knew. In other words, they're in the business of making money. How can they make money? Well, they're going to make money by demeaning a people, showing them as subhuman beings. Well, who can they demean? Africans? African Americans? No way. Not anymore. Asian Americans? Forget it. The Irish? You're going to do Jews? You're going to do Latinos? No, no, no. Well, who can you do and get away with? Who can you really do a number on and get by with it? You can probably still do it with some people down south, okay, because the South is still game, I think, and the hillbilly image is still kind of prevails, you know, the mountains, Appalachia, places like Arkansas, West Virginia. But you can certainly do it with those Arabs because you've been doing it, no one says anything, and of course the politics of the day, or at least our policy, is not necessarily one that that's even-handed in that part of the world. And so it's a reflection of our policy as well as our prejudices, and we can get away with it. And the films make money.
And is money the bottom line?
Well, I think money and prejudice go together, right? In other words, when we were vilifying African Americans, we made a ton of money, but at the same time, we were a prejudiced group of filmmakers. When we had all those cowboy and Indian movies that attracted, you know, literally millions each and every Saturday at the Saturday matinees, and they made tons of money, but look at the cost. So the moral responsibility, in other words, the ethics, the morality of it all goes out the window, doesn't it? All in the name of money and politics and prejudice.
Let's talk about the image, and you've started on it already, that Americans have of Arabs, Palestinians, and what have you. Do you believe Americans will ever see Arab Americans in the same light as before 9/11, in terms of viewing them with suspicion and what have you?
Well, I think so. But I think it's going to take a long time, and I think a lot of it depends on what happens in the future. Certainly, even though the 19 terrorists were from the Arab world and 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia, someone with the administration and some producers are linking innocent Americans of Arab heritage, 3.5 million of us. Most of us are Christians, like myself. You know, we're not Muslims, but they're linking us with the lunatic Islamic fringe. And most Muslims are peaceful people, just like most Jews and most Christians and most Buddhists. But somehow this flying wild Arab profile, you know, it's sort of like driving wild black. It's becoming more and more intense, and I think there's more and more suspicion within the community itself. And it's not going to get any better sometime soon. It's going to continue.
I'm Bob Franklin. You're listening to the Radio Public Affairs program, Like It Is.
And we're talking about ethnic profiling as well in terms
right.
of how do you bring those groups with like-minded charges of ethnic profiling together to send a message that this is wrong and this has to stop?
Well, I think the problem has been and continues to be, if I'm a group that has been vilified, right, I'm just glad it's not me. And so I'm not that eager to go and support another group. I think that's, you know, you sort of act in your own interests. I think, however, that there will be support for the Arab American community down the line. I think it will be gradual, but it will come. Whether it will stop the discrimination and the profiling, I don't know, because there's just a movement for this right now, and it continues. It continues to intensify.
So those groups that may be possibly sitting on the sideline watching Arabs being profiled, they need to maybe get off the bench and step forward?
Well, some of them have. I know, for example, there, but not enough. I mean, certainly Asian Americans, particularly Japanese Americans that went through the that were placed in camps, you know, loyal American citizens, primarily because they were considered Japs. They weren't considered Americans. They were. I mean, they were Americans of Japanese heritage, but we referred to them as Japs in our media. And I think many people, particularly some people with special interests, don't refer to us as Americans of Arab heritage, and don't even refer to us, as the vast majority of us, as being American Christians, but we're Arabs. And therefore, if you link us with the word Arab, which is in and of itself a negative connotation, it makes the profiling that much easier.
We should apologize to our listeners for the bad telephone line here. I do apologize, but the topic is so important, we need to go on, and we will go on with Mr. Jack Shaheen. A very interesting conversation we're having regarding stereotyping. Mr. Shaheen, you spent some time in the Middle East in Arab countries. Tell us a little bit about your experience there.
Well, you know, I lived for several years. I was in Jordan. I was in Lebanon. I've traveled extensively to, you know, about 14 different Arab countries. And what you find, you really find a warm, hospitable people. Everyone, almost everyone, particularly the average everyday person, they love Americans. They love what we represent. They don't like our policy. They've never liked our policy. But you go into a home, and it's like going into a home here in our own country. People are very open, very friendly, and very devout. In other words, you know, when you go to a mosque, I never went to a mosque until I went to the Arab world. And you know, what do people do? They kneel and pray. And to whom do they pray? God. Whose God? Our God, the God of Christians, the God of Jews, and the God of Muslims. And it's very devout, and like all faiths, there are some people, you know, just like we have some Catholic priests who abuse children, we have some Muslim clerics who, you know, who are really radicals and who are not very nice people, but they're a minority of a minority. I loved all my visits to the region, mainly because I found that people there are pretty much just like you and me. You know, they want their kids to have a good education, good health, and that they really are pretty much just like Mr. and Mrs. Jones down the street.
Now, Mr. Shaheen, I'd like for you to take off your journalist hat for a second, or your author's hat for a second, and put on your psychologist or psychiatrist hat and try to answer this question. What, in your opinion, will be the psychological impact of stereotyping, not only on Arabs, but on other ethnic groups? What do you think?
Well, I think it's an excellent question. The first answer to that is the children get damaged. It's always been the children who become damaged. There is no image on television or in the movies or in novels that they can relate to. They feel that their heritage is a heritage of violence. They feel that their faith is not a true faith. They're ashamed of their heritage, they're ashamed of their religion, and they have a tendency to regress. That's number one. Number two, I think, psychologically, what it does, it puts us into a trap. whenever we begin thinking all those people are different and subhumans, whereas we are much better than they are and we are humane, then we fall into a trap of deceiving ourselves and creating an enemy that does not exist. And usually innocent lives are lost, both our lives and their lives, and those are the dangers.
And how do we go about relaxing fears of the other regarding stereotypes? What can society, the broader society, do to relax those fears?
I always tell young people with whom I speak to speak out, and that when they see an injustice right there that concerns them, that anyone being stereotyped, anyone being vilified because of color, gender, creed, or culture, not to remain silent. That's the only way. When you see an injustice, speak out against it. Because if you don't, if you remain silent, that ensures that the stereotyping, that the injustice will continue. As far as the stereotyping that comes at the upper level of government, and some people can never change. On the other hand, there are those who will change. But usually the older we get, the more fixed our prejudices become, and you have to look to the younger generation for change.
Let me ask you, going inside and turning on the television set, is there anything on television that Arab Americans should really turn to watch and to enjoy? Because I think you've mentioned that there's an invisibility about...
No, we're invisible. You never see a character who happens to be an American of Arab heritage or an American Muslim. There's nothing, and most Arab American families and most American Muslim families try to prevent their children from watching television, because the only thing that's there are old movies blasting their heritage, like True Lies or Rules of Engagement, or terrible, you know, the Pat Robertson show, which has a tendency to say Islam is a violent faith, period, exclamation point. And so what media systems teach young Arab Americans and American Muslims is that they don't count, they don't matter, they don't exist, and if they do exist, they exist primarily as undesirables, and that's the tragedy. That's something that very few people are aware of, Bob.
Educational institutions across this country, they're in the business of educating people, students, to be better leaders for tomorrow. What are some of the courses that you see that universities need to emphasize to help to correct the problem that you just laid out a few minutes ago?
Well, I think you need courses. You have courses throughout our country on how different groups are vilified. There's no course on how Arabs and Muslims are vilified. Not one. Not in any Middle East Studies Center. There isn't one in the country, number one. The encouraging news is that many sociology courses, many courses in multiculturalism do reach out and touch or try to touch as many different groups as possible. And I think that's encouraging. That's something I didn't have when I was in college, but that does exist now. But much, much more needs to be done.
Well, let me talk about you a little bit, and I want to get your feel as to, are you a pessimist or an optimist when it comes to one day putting to death stereotypes?
Well, I've always been an optimist. It's just that in this particular case, what happens is when we kill or when we put to death or when we terminate one stereotype, history shows that another one surfaces. But you can't look at that. You have to seize the moment. And if there's an injustice, you have to speak out against it now. Because if you don't take action, if you don't act responsibly, who's going to do it? And then what happens if you remain silent? So I'm a realist. You contest while you can the injustices of the moment, and just hope and pray, and you know, to our Savior that your work does some good. You can't think about what will happen. You have to think about what is right to do. You have to do what is right.
How has your book, The TV Arab and Real Bad Arabs, been received?
Real Bad Arabs has been received. I couldn't ask for a better response.
My final question to you, and I'd like for you to take a moment, think about some of the people in your life who have inspired you to go on and to continue to fight the good fight and not give up.
Well, I can think of three people. One is an African-American by the name of Bill Fields. I met Bill when I was in St. Louis. He was the first African-American to have a talk show, a one-hour talk show on a St. Louis television station, and he was interviewing me. And we cut away to a commercial break, and he looked at me and he said, "Jack," he said, "you sound like a blickety-blank academic. Just tell it the way it is." He said, "Tell it the way it is." And from that moment on, we became very dear friends. The second person was Arthur Lord. Art was Jewish. When Art did a special for the Today Show on the Arab stereotype, he called me and basically said, "You know, are you the Arab who's writing all these things?" And I said, "Yeah. Who are you?" He says, "Well, I'm the Jew that's going to sleep in bed with you on this issue." And we became bosom buddies and remained friends for nearly 20 years. And the third person, I grew up in the Pittsburgh area, you know, and the third person was an English professor who grew up near where I was born in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. And he always told me to be kind. He said, "Tell the truth and be kind." He says, "It's easier to be mean, but it's much more difficult to be kind. So you reach out with the facts, with the truth, but do it in a kind manner." And his name was Bob Duncan. And those three gentlemen, perhaps more so than anyone else, with the exception of my wife, of course,
yes,
have done the most to influence me.
My guest has been Jack Shaheen. He's author of The TV Arab and Real Bad Arabs. Real Bad Arabs, yes. Thank you, Jack, for joining me and being a guest today on Like It Is.
Listen, Bob, no one has asked the questions that you have. You're an excellent interviewer, and I feel privileged to have been able to share thoughts with you. Thank you.
Thank you now.
All right.
Bye-bye. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.